The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This week, Ford introduced the newest generation of its popular Escape compact crossover. It looks radically different from the current Escape we've known for years, and to some doesn't even look like an SUV anymore. Today, I'll be discussing the new Escape with my co-hosts. The first is MotorOne.com senior editor, Greg Fink.
Hi, John.
And holding down the second chair is fellow senior editor, Jeff Perez. How you doing, Jeff?
How you doing, John?
Good, thanks. So, the big news this week is the fourth generation 2020 Ford Escape, which debuted a couple days ago. And I found it a pretty shocking debut. It was not what I expected when they released it. So let's go around the table and get everybody's opinion on Ford's newest SUV. Jeff, how about you start us off?
I like the new look. I think it's a refresh from the last gen. Smoother. I think the last gen was a little frumpy.
Do you think it is less SUV-like than the last version?
Definitely. It looks a lot like the European Focus. Pretty much is just a Focus that's lifted. But it definitely looks more like a hatchback than the last gen Escape did.
Do you think that will hurt it in the U.S.? Because in the U.S., we're obsessed with SUVs, and usually that comes along with being butch and macho and truck-like, and this is about as far from being butch and macho as I've ever seen an SUV.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think eventually, like most of these crossovers, it'll get some rugged body panels or whatever that might help it a little bit. So we posted the images on Instagram compared to the previous gen model, and it seemed like a lot of the comments were negative.
I hadn't looked at the comments yet. That's interesting. Do you remember when the third generation Escape, which is, you know, this is replacing, do you remember when that came out and what the reception was like compared to the second gen? Because the second gen was very boxy, very rugged. And the third gen, you know, like this one, was also kind of softer, more car-like. I certainly remember it being negative at that point. I was negative about it when the third generation came out.
Yeah, I think it was just a big transition, right? So the first gen was really different. I guess not really different for the time, but it was different compared to the last gen. And I think people were kind of shocked by that. I think the transition from last gen to the current gen is a little more cohesive, but I still think it's a weird shift for a lot of people.
What about the interior?
Yeah, well, the last gen Escape had a really bad interior.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of those older Fords were pretty bad. But I think the new one is really good. It takes a lot of cues from the Explorer, which just came out a few months ago. You know, it's got the same iPad style screen, some nicer stuff. It's got the same rotary dial too, which is, I don't know if that's better or worse, but it's definitely newer.
I don't mind the rotary dial for the shifter, I even don't mind the navigation screen, the infotainment screen, you know, sitting atop the dash, not being embedded in it. And at least in the Escape, unlike the Explorer that you said debuted a month or two ago, there's not like a really big vertical version of the screen that pops up from the dash like the Explorer had. That there was a lot of grumbling about the Explorer's vertical screen that just stuck up too far. This one looks much more appropriate, not like it's going to block your eyesight from the driver's seat.
Yeah, it looks normal. I mean, compared to what the current normal is in most SUVs, that's about on par. The Explorer's a little much.
What do you think about the head-up display, which is new? The Escape has never had a head-up display, but the Escape's version is a little different than head-up displays we usually see in cars.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of head-up displays in general, especially on, you know, compact crossover like this. There's only so much information you need. But the way Ford did it with the little pop-up glass thing is kind of like a cop-out. I understand, like, the glass... If typical head-up display has it on the windshield or the glasses, different from standard glass, and I guess it's just a way to cut costs for Ford to just do a little pop-up, but it looks kind of tacked on.
Yeah, I wonder if it was a cost-cutting thing or if it was something to do with the angle of the windshield, like maybe it's raked too much and you can't,
right,
you know, bounce a HUD off it or something like that. But I agree. The Mazda vehicles, the Mazda 3, the Mazda CX-5 had that little flip-up glass for a head-up display, and I found it a lot more distracting than a normal head-up display that shines on the windshield. How about you, Greg? What are your thoughts on the new Escape?
It is ugly.
It's like kind of all right in some ways. Like, you know, it's the opposite of the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. The parts themselves, like you show me that headlight, it's a nice looking headlight. The rear end, kind of all right, but combined, I don't know. I think it's kind of ugly, kind of weird. I think you got, you know, RAV4 out right now, which is very kind of butch looking,
yeah,
and it looks great for it. Or you got Mazda making CX-5, which goes with a more sleek look like this, but does a better job. I think Ford's kind of, I don't know, put themselves in a corner where they're trying not to make cars anymore, and now they've made their SUVs look like cars, and people want SUVs that look like SUVs, and the few people who want cars probably want cars that look like cars.
I tend to agree with you, but like I was saying about the last generation Escape that didn't look butch anymore, I made that same argument when the third generation came out, and I was like, I thought Escape sales would plummet. And, you know, if I recall correctly, they didn't, like, take off immediately. Like, there was an adjustment period. But eventually, they came back up. And eventually, I would say that Ford also made the Escape a little more butch with the mid-cycle refresh in the third generation. But I tend to agree with you that, like, you know, they went for super slick, super car-like. And, man, you brought up the RAV4, and I think that's a great... comparison to this. It's the exact opposite strategy.
Yeah, and I think the Toyota RAV4 looks great. And as I got no problem with the sleek look. The CX-5 looks great as well, but Mazda makes it work. This Ford, I don't know, it's not doing it for me. The other thing too, the previous one, that was during the Mulally 1 Ford era, so I don't know, inside baseball where I was sitting, I didn't like this transition, but I kind of understood it's got to appeal to Europe as much as it has to appeal to here. Jim Hackett's kind of gotten this, like, well, cars will still be in Europe, but in America, this is SUV land. So I was kind of hoping, you know, America would get a little bit more of an American taste looking crossover. The Kuga, which they sell in Europe, actually, I think looks a little better. It's the same basic car, but it's got a slightly bigger grill, and they give it a nice ST line package. So somehow we got the worst looking version of this, like, kind of boring looking blob.
Well, it's that's another great point. In Europe, so they call this the Kuga, but it's a little different. It looks a little I would say a little sharper in the front end, and like you said, a little bigger grill. They also are keeping the Focus in Europe, and they're launching the Focus Active, which is like a butched up SUV-ish version of the Focus. I think even that looks more like an SUV than the new Escape. Because it's got rugged cues on it, and this new Escape has zero rugged cues.
Well, here's the other thing I love too about this. You know, it's an SUV or crossover SUV, and Ford's all crossover SUVs. So of course, their press release, what do they compare it to? Their cars. The shield-shaped trapezoidal grille is inspired by the sixth generation Mustang. First of all, I don't see that. These guys must be blind. While the lower front end borrows from the Ford GT. This is the biggest stretch I've ever seen in my life. This is like, you know, hey, I'm dating Taylor Swift. No, you're not. Well, I mean, my girlfriend has a face. Taylor Swift has a face. It's got to be the same.
That is an apt comparison. No, I see no GT cues, no supercar cues whatsoever in the new Escape. What about the engines, the powertrains? There's four of them. Can you remind me? I know there's two gas and two electric.
The big one is it's two gas, two hybrid, but one of the hybrids a plug-in. The big one to me is that 1.5 liter EcoBoost three cylinder that starts it off, which is not, I don't think it's all new. They've had a 1.5 liter three cylinder for a while now, but it's a seems like a big deal. They're making a three cylinder be a pretty big volume seller on a car that typically you wouldn't expect a three-cylinder class.
I've driven a lot of three-cylinder Fords, and I've liked every single one. That three-cylinder is gutsy, and it's not too unrefined. And in the Escape, it's going to have 180 horsepower, which is nothing to sneeze at. That's you know, a good base engine.
I agree. It's a different take to do that, but I've been in the cars too, and unless you knew it was a three-cylinder, you wouldn't really question that it's a three-cylinder. It is very smooth. It's pretty torquey. It's got 177 pound-feet. I don't know what RPM, but in, you know, the Fiesta, it comes on pretty low.
Yeah, it's a great engine in the Fiesta. Now, mind you, that's a lot smaller vehicle, but this one is tuned for more power. And then there's the 2-liter EcoBoost engine, which is the second gas engine. That makes 250 horsepower and 275 pound-feet of torque, which is, you know, I would say class competitive for the larger optional engine. Yeah.
The other thing I like about that 3-cylinder, too, it has cylinder deactivation, so you can only run on 2 cylinders if you need to, which I think is just funny. It's like, let's just deactivate as many cylinders as possible. It's good for gas.
There's only 3 cylinders.
We've already got 3.
Yeah, how many do you have to deactivate? Like you said, the two hybrids, one's a regular hybrid and one's a plug-in hybrid, and they haven't released official EPA mileage estimates, but which I'd be really interested to hear for the traditional hybrid what its miles per gallon is going to be. But they did say that the plug-in hybrid would have a all-electric range of over 30 miles. Which is, again, class competitive. There's a good number of, I would say the most useful, most practical plug-in hybrids have at least 30 mile ranges.
Well, if we were pretty good at math too, we could kind of figure this out. They say the plug-in is going to do, standard hybrid has an estimated range of 550 miles and it's got a 14.2 gallon tank. If I were a good mathematician, I would know pretty quickly around what they're estimating that, you know, highway fuel economy to be.
Let me see.
But I'm not, so.
I got 30, rounded up 39 miles per gallon, which, again,
yeah, so around 40-ish, you know, low, high 30s, maybe 40, or, you know, but that gives us a clue of where they think it's going to be.
Yeah, and which, with hybrids, usually the city and usually the spread is a lot closer. So I would say, you know, combined, it might be high 30s. So I think they're going to sell a million of them. I think it's just, I agree that the rest of the, most of the industry wants their SUVs to be butch, but Ford has backed itself into a corner by announcing to the world they're going to stop selling cars. So all of a sudden, the Escape has to do double duty and somehow replace all of those sales that were going to the Focus. So what they've done to my eyes is make a vehicle that to some people can look like an SUV and be their Escape, and to other people looks car-like enough that it can be their Focus. I mean, it's really Ford trying to have its cake and eat it too. And I think they're, for lack of a better description, I think they're going to get away with it. Like, I don't think there's anything here that screams to me this is going to be like an abject failure. And I'm taking a lesson from the third generation, which I went on record saying, you know, Escape sales are going to plummet, and they didn't at all. So I do think there's room in the market for SUVs that have the clean look like this, like the Monster CX-5 and butch SUVs that look like the RAV4, where they're taking all their cues from the Tacoma pickup and vehicles like that. It is interesting, though, to me that the Escape got this slick look, but the Explorer didn't. And, you know, these two were redesigned pretty much at the same time. Their new generations debuted, you know, within months of each other. The new Explorer looks very masculine, very, I would say, sporty even. Like, it's set back on its haunches because it has that new rear-wheel drive platform. It looks fantastic. But it's in a totally different way than the Escape, which kind of surprised me. Do either of you see that?
I think that kind of comes down probably to the fact that this is a more global-focused car, so it has to hit Europe and America and other areas. But it is still primarily a North American model, and they can kind of cater it to our market. But I agree, they'll sell a million of these things.
So we'd love to hear what you all think about the new Escape. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter. We are at Motor1.com with no dot. And we can just continue the discussion there. And of course, meet us at our website, Motor1.com, where you can find each of us and all the other editors and writers in the comments. So after the break, we're going to get into what we're all driving this week. So stick around. Welcome back. During this part of the show, we talk about what cards we're driving this week. And today we're going to start with Jeff. Jeff, what are you driving this week?
I am driving the 2020 Kia Soul, specifically the X-Line version.
So this is, describe to everyone how this differs from a regular Soul.
Per typical crossover segment these days, every new crossover has to be ruggified, quote unquote, right? So the X-Line is, gets some black cladding around the fenders, some new stuff up front, some roof rails. It looks like you can take it off-road, theoretically, but it's not really much different from the base model. It looks good, but it's not like an off-road Soul, if that's what you're thinking.
And it's probably important to point out that Kia does not even offer the Soul with all-wheel drive. So, you know, you only have front-wheel drive. But this is our first time, first extended period of time with the brand new Soul altogether. So what is your take on just the Soul, the new Soul in general?
Oh, I love it. I mean, this one is $22,000 with the X-Line package.
And that's
the
base, a really great price. That's crazy.
Right? Yeah. So my thinking is, what else can you get in this class that's as well-rounded as the Soul, right? So the Nissan Kicks might be a little cheaper and a little more spacious. The CX-3 is probably a little more fun to drive. But I think both of those SUVs have enough faults that you can look back at the Soul and be like, all right, this is a better all-around crossover. And it looks cool.
You know, as you both know, but I'll reveal to our listeners, I myself personally own a Soul of the last generation. It's a 2014 model year. And I was really worried when the new one debuted and came out. I wasn't a huge fan of the kind of evolution of the design, but it's really grown on me. And I like the X-Line version that you have the best. And what you just said is why we originally liked the Soul. We did extensive research. And in terms of both the number and the kind of premiumness of features, but also the utility, like the actual cargo space, like nothing beats the Soul for the same price. Like you just named the Mazda CX-3, which is incredibly small. And the Nissan Kicks, which might be less expensive, but it feels less expensive every place you touch. What about you, Greg? Have you driven the new Soul yet?
I drove it for a quick lunch yesterday, and I wouldn't put anything I'm going to say in stone yet because it was a very quick drive, but in the pencil that I felt it was driving, it was really nice. It was like the old Soul, but better. The chassis seems a lot stiffer, and the steering seems a little less sloppy, and it does all the good things that the Soul used to do and looks a little better and seems to be mechanically a little better. I guess it's got a little less horsepower, but I didn't have a problem with it.
Yeah, you know, we can do a podcast episode entirely on this point I'm going to make at some other time, but creating a rugged version of any car makes it better. Even though that sounds like an unenthusiast thing to say, I love it when automakers take a car that isn't rugged and makes a faux rugged version of it that can't actually do anything off-road. But in my opinion, that aesthetic always makes a vehicle look better. And it doesn't matter if it can actually do anything because the majority of people don't actually ever do anything off-road. So it's just the look. And I think that's why people loved SUVs in the first place, was just the look of them. So I love them. I know Brandon, our managing editor, Brandon Cherkis, he's driving the Nissan Pathfinder Rocky Creek Edition right now.
Rock Creek. You said Rocky.
Rocky Creek. Is that a location somewhere? Or I don't even know where they got that name.
I think it's a location. I was on the auto show trip with them, so I should know this, but I believe
who knows, maybe it's a brand of like water.
It's not Eddie Bauer.
Yeah, anyway, that's the same thing. It's like a ruggedized version of the Pathfinder, which itself is not a rugged vehicle, but it looks, but to me it looks better than the regular Pathfinder.
And the Pathfinder at least has all-wheel drive.
There you go, so it can venture into tall grass. All right, so Greg, what are you driving this week?
I am driving my personal 2012 Volkswagen CC, short for carbon copy, because they saw the Mercedes-Benz CLS back in the late 2000s and just said, make a copy of it.
That's great. How many miles
it's actually
does it
a comfort coupe, I think.
How many miles
it's got
it
like 46,500 or something.
Oh, that's pretty young.
Yeah, it's young. It's CPO, has some warranty. So by the time the DSG goes, hopefully Volkswagen will pay for it.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so it has the DSG. And what engine is in that?
It's a 2-liter turbo. The one probably slightly different numbers or whatever. You know, they're like EA 1888 and a little, but it's, you know.
Versions of that. Versions of that.
It. It's the same 2-liter turbo that's been around. It's like 200 horsepower.
The ubiquitous.
It's a good engine, good car. Gets 26 miles per gallon. Very quiet. Very comfortable. Perfect car for, you know, we're based out of Miami here, so it's a good Miami car.
It is. And I know I'm going to reveal to the listeners that before this, you did attempt to buy a vintage Lexus LS. Remember? Do you remember what year that was?
Yeah, that was a 95. And instead, I bought a not that vintage 2008 Mazda RX-8, which quickly exploded. And now I have no 2008 Mazda RX-8 and I have no $3,000 in my bank account. So
yeah, so it's understandable why you would have ended up in a much more practical, reliable, newer vehicle after having an RX-8 explode on you.
Honestly, God knows if this will be more reliable. It, so far, it has been. It was really the warranty that appealed to me after that.
That's understandable.
That LS, though, is perfect South Florida old man car.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I wanted that or like a Cadillac DeVille. Like not a really old, you know, the front drive Cadillac DeVilles from like the 90s.
The first generation Lexus LSs, I have like an ongoing eBay alert for many cars, but for one of them is that generation Lexus LS. And of course, out there in the world is that million mile Lexus LS. Who owns that? I forget.
Farah had it. I don't know if he sold it. I know he completed the...
No, I don't think he sold it. I think he still like loans it out for people to drive to like push up the miles and... I think they passed a million already. So yeah, those are just great cars. So I am driving the 2019 Volkswagen Beetle Final Edition, which also has the 2.0 engine that is probably very closely related to the one you're currently driving in your CC. And it is Safari Uni in color. I will, you know, make it simple. It is beige.
Oh, it's flesh.
Very flesh, kind of creepily flesh, actually.
Yeah.
And the wheels are white and body colored. So I've got the flesh color on the wheels as well. And it sounds like I'm making fun of it, but I actually love the Beetle. I love the first gen and how cute it was. I love the second gen and how kind of like Porsche-esque it is. Like it's like a blown up and then squashed Porsche 911. I've always loved that there's been so many special editions of them, that they've made turbo versions, like performance versions. They've made, you know, the Dune model. They just have fun with it. And have for a long time. You know, I'm not going to be reviewing it or, you know, doing a pro con or anything like that because you're not going to be able to buy it soon. So what's the point? But I want to write a eulogy for it because I kind of feel with the Beetle dying that we're losing. It's the last of an era of vehicles from the kind of the late 90s that was led by this nostalgia, like the Ford Thunderbird, the PT Cruiser, the Chevy HHR, and others.
SSR.
Oh, SSR. And
no, both.
Oh, both. Yeah, you're right. The truck and the kind of wagon thing. And it was just an era where automakers were kind of like having fun and riding this wave. And there was, you know, I'm going to call it, there was like whimsy. There was like, this car makes you smile. I liked that stuff. This is really the last one. You could argue that the Fiat 500 is also of that, but nobody's buying that either. And since nobody's buying the Beetle, you know, business models dictate that it has to go away. But I'm certainly, I think it's sad. I'd love to see it go on longer. And you know, I wish it had found kind of a vein to tap where it had a loyal following that kept it alive. But that didn't happen. So, you know, it has to go the way of the dodo. And, you know, I don't think it's ever going to be like a classic where they're, you know, going for more than they were bought new on the auction block. But, you know, there's still plenty of versions of this Beetle that I'd be a happy owner of. So you can keep an eye out for my eulogy of the Beetle Final Edition in the coming weeks on Motor One. All right, so
then we still have the Minis too. So if you need another retro car, they live somehow.
You know, that's a great point. That was, you know, I was going to ask you guys to help me, like, you know, make sure I was thinking of all these cars. And you're right, the Mini is one. But I also think like Mini as a brand has, in order to survive, it has had to kind of evolve and migrate into segments that are not the whimsical side. Like the Countryman is just like, you know, a cash grab. It's if you make an SUV, they will buy it. And so Mini made an SUV. And I think it's the least fun and interesting Mini you can buy. I like all the others more than the Countryman. So, but yeah, that's a great, great addition.
Do muscle cars like the Challenger fall into that category, or are they their own thing?
They fall in the category of nostalgia, but not kind of, I would say, whimsy. I think they overlap. Those two things overlap a lot. Because the Prowler was, well, the Prowler was never really like a muscle car. but the Prowler falls into that category too, of just like crazy stuff the automakers did in the late 90s. And you know me, I love the Challenger. Like, yes, it'll get its butt kicked by a Mustang and a Camaro around a track, but I would drive a Challenger because of how it makes me feel when I look at it and drive it, more than I would a Mustang, just because it can go a few, you know, tenths of a second faster somewhere.
Yeah, I like the Challenger too, because the type of car that when you sit in, it feel like it's not judging you for unbuckling your belt and undoing the top button and just letting it hang out a little while you're driving.
That was very
specific. Comfortable car.
Yeah.
It's a very comfortable car. The Camaro and Mustang are a little more involving. The Challenger is just like, don't worry, man, relax. We're going to get there at a fast pace.
Yeah, and you're going to look super cool doing it. And, you know, kind of like these cars are really hard to redesign as well when they're based on nostalgia. And I would say Volkswagen, their second generation Beetle was hugely successful in terms of a redesign. Like that, you know, the second generation looks different from the first one and better in a lot of ways, which is so hard to do.
I don't know. I always love that first generation new Beetle.
I've had a weird affinity for that one. So when that came out, I guess part of the marketing and promotional stuff, they had a game for Nintendo 64, which is showing my age, I guess how young I am, called Beetle Adventure Racing, which was just a fantastic game. You could only drive the new Beetle, and you literally couldn't put any mods on it. It was just stock Beetles racing around these crazy, you know, environments. It was great.
I think that's before they figured out the formula for good racing games, you know, which is lots of cars and modding. No, we're going to make a game with one car that you can't make any changes to. Do you remember the original Beetle had, there was a tuner who would make a 550 horsepower all-wheel drive version of it?
I remember the RSI that existed that Volkswagen sold in Europe.
I'm sad to see it go in this era of SUVs swallowing up everything, such as the time we live in. And I'm sure it'll circle back around again at some point.
I was just going to say, I can't wait for the Beetle crossover when they start putting
who knows,
classic nameplates on everything.
Lindsay Lohan really ruined the Beetle name with that Herbie movie that she redid like 10 years ago, so... It's been an uphill battle ever since then.
Yeah. Although I feel like that was well received.
I like that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe I'm the lone guy.
I've never seen it, but now we know that Jeff has. So I think that's a really great point to end on. That brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us at motor1.com, where we're writing about cars all day long. So join us there or on our Facebook and Twitter accounts, which are at motor1.com. Jeff and Greg, thank you.
Thank you.
And thank all of you for listening. We'll see you next week.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.